My name is Olga Filipova. I'm with Elfiel, and I will be presenting our company and what do we do there. So Elfiel was founded 12 years ago in 2001, and with the idea of designing and manufacturing open hardware cameras. It's Elfiel is located here in Salt Lake City, and the cameras over the years have found applications in wide variety of applications. Partially this idea of designing an open hardware camera was aiming at the applications that we sometimes cannot even think of, maybe. It's we just give you the toy, do whatever you want with it. So of course the camera has to be powerful enough to begin with. So then our clients, researchers, mostly it's like universities and research labs who are finding these new applications to the camera. So they are capable of adding new functions easily just because the camera is open source and all the information is available how to deal with it. So why did we decide even to how did we come up with this idea of designing open hardware camera? Partially was like being camera users ourselves and doing scientific research. Our founder Andrei Filipov, he was physicist in Moscow General Physics Institute, and was then later working here at Cortin Company, the company that does high-speed, ultra-high-speed cameras. So that company was mostly making them mechanical cameras, and Andrei was invited to switch them to the digital. And in his experience, mostly that he found that a lot of times the proprietary device that is very capable of performing what it's supposed to perform. As soon as you try to request it to do something else or add a little bit of functionality or step out of its ways a little bit, it becomes very like hitting the wall. It becomes very difficult. And it's especially, we found in scientific research, you sometimes cannot envision what kind of application, what kind of use could be interesting to our customers. So hitting that wall himself and at the same time discovering the power of GNU Linux and ability to modify somebody else's code, find something that is already available, modify it, but mainly have the code open, was interesting enough and seemed powerful enough to decide to go ahead, quit his job, and start the company. So this is how it all started in 2001. And the first camera was had the similar structure as this one. And this is a much later model. I don't have the picture of the old model. But the idea was to have the system board with a separate processor and FPGA. The FPGA is a programmable chip that you can change functionality after it was placed on the board already. So the FPGA was designed to be responsible for the video processing, image processing, and also there is a separate sensor board which allowed to connect different sensors to the same system board. So that was beginning of the modular structure along with the high performance of the camera. And so this is basically how the camera is organized. It has some of the specifications here. I'm not going to list them. So first couple years, nevertheless, were really hard, especially because with open source software, all you need is computer, some free time, and brains to just start coding and maybe develop something and maybe even be able to sell it. With hardware design, it's a little bit more complicated. It's more expensive, first of all, because you have to build actual hardware. And if you made a mistake on your schematic design of PCB, the circuit board, then you have to, after all the components have been placed, you have to go back and basically start all over. So that's a little bit more difficult to start an open hardware company, or any hardware company, I guess, than just purely software. I'm not saying that it's easier to do software, but just not in terms of intellectual, but in terms of just financial means. First couple years were kind of hard to start. Even the first camera was rather quickly assembled, and the first images we were able to get in 3 months after the camera was built, after the code implementation and everything. Then what we did for kind of advertisement is mostly, again, not big fans of advertisement in its pure form. So mostly like writing articles about the camera in Linux Journal, Linux Devices magazines, different computer publications. And about a couple of years, it got attention of scientific researchers earlier, but in 2003, we got a really exciting call from Google, who already purchased a couple cameras and worked with them, and they were asking if you guys are ready to design a special camera for our book scanning project, and can you make it as good as your original camera? So that was definitely fun to work with them on that project, and I mentioned the modular structure of the camera. It was for us not such a big of a development. Even right now, we usually don't take custom orders because too busy with just the planned project that we already have. But with this camera, we just had to use two system boards instead of one for faster image processing. And we had to design a special sensor board because the the original camera had probably 1.3 megapixel back then, or maybe 3 megapixel sensor, and this one had 11 megapixel different, not CMOS, but CCD sensor. And as I said, Google requested that, placed that order in 2003, and in 2004 the cameras were scanning books already. And we also were able to compete with this project, just being at that time one-man company, with Canon and Kodak, because they had like cameras that, exactly like I said, were pretty good at what they were doing, but I forgot which one of them had the mechanical shutter that was kind of breaking after 10,000 images. And of course, for normal usage, the camera, 10,000 images, well, I don't know. 50,000 images, okay. That's a long life for regular camera usage. But when they were scanning books, I don't know, several pages per minute, several, maybe 10, I don't know how many, don't remember exactly. But 40 pages per minute, okay. So, of course, this limit of 50,000 shutters was quickly achieved, and there was like an anecdote that Google was trying to bring cameras back to Canon for repair under the warranty. But after a while, Canon said, no, we can't do that anymore. You guys stop, do something else. We cannot sell you cameras for this project. And at the same time, they were not ready to to kind of design something specifically. Even this was a big project, but they were not ready to jump into development just right for this. Or it would take them a lot longer. So, and one more thing I want to add, that also being open source company, Google could understand that even if we go out of business next day, for whatever reason, like cannot do this anymore, the documentation is available, so everything that was developed up to now will be available, and they can continue with the project on their own, technically. So after that, there was a next order to help them with the street view camera. So these street view cameras all have Alfel electronics inside. So Google designed their own rig, and the street view software is all by Google, of course, but system board and sensor board, the same as was in our original camera, and well, this one is updated, but technically that camera with three eyes is that just recording me right now is, has the same system board and sensor board that Google uses in the street view. Again, that's that was years 2005, 2008. Since then, they developed a different street view camera. I don't know if they're using those anymore. Actually, the new design is not that smart, but I can talk about this later. But anyway, it was really fun to work with Google engineers directly on that project, because we had to help them integrate our electronics into the camera system. And then, like speaking of applications, I mentioned that there is a variety. Of course, a lot of them are just robotics applications, different kinds. This particular one is the Moss Landing Marine Lab engineers decided to design the robot that will be like underwater, under ice. So they are doing explorations in Antarctica, in the under ice explorations. And it used to be that they had to send a person in the big drilled hole to observe whatever the whatever life forms there are under the ice. And it was hugely expensive, because to bring all the equipment to drill big enough hole for the aqualungist to dive in and in this harsh environment. And so they decided to build this robot that is just about 6 inches wide in diameter, and they can just use the man drill. Just the, like what is used for under ice fishing, that's the same drill. And that robot has two cameras inside. One is used for navigation with high frame rate and lower resolution setup. And the other camera is used for high resolution photography, like if something interesting appears in the view, then takes an image. So this is their kind of setup out there in the Antarctic. Then the camera also was used on the NASA Global Hawk unmanned airplane. It was taking images from about 20 kilometers from near space of the Earth under. And the camera was integrated into the scientific equipment they had installed on this unmanned airplane, and was probably, this airplane was flying for 36 hours or something like that, and the camera was constantly taking images, aerial images, aerial photographs. So in Global Hawk, it wasn't used for navigation, but people are using this camera for navigation of the unmanned vehicles, UAV, like quadcopters and other multi-copters. So these pictures on the bottom are showing the camera being at the... Actually, they used a stereo camera, so they could detect distances, because that was a competition in Moscow, Russia, for this UAV quadcopters, to where they had to take off the target, go through certain space, and avoid obstacles, and land on the on another target, and then I think come back. So they needed that kind of 3D information from stereo vision to be able to detect these obstacles. And these people went to the to be the finalists, but they didn't win. And the unusual application, we have even some cinematographers, the, what is it called? Not the alternative, not kind of, not the main line, not the Hollywood, but those who, forgot the word, like independent, yes, independent filmmakers. They, some of them are really interested in doing the whole movie with open tools. Like they use the open source software that they either develop or they share with other developers. And then they also was thinking, okay, can we do it with the open hardware as well? Is there a camera we can use? So we donated this camera for the project, and we haven't seen the movie yet. They are planning, they think it's going to be released like really, really soon, because it was sent to the competition, so they couldn't show it to anybody except themselves before the competition. But it's in Brazil, it's called Floresta Vermelha, which is a red forest, and it's a short 20-minute movie shot with Alfel camera. And as part of their return to the community, what they did, and we donated the camera, but we usually do that when there is some kind of, we call it GPL agreement, so general public license agreement. We give you the camera with a big discount or for free, and you guys do something back. You develop the code that can be useful, or, so what they did, they designed like this program for editing, and I am not 100% sure if it's like completely their own, but it doesn't matter. Maybe they taken somebody's and then developed it further. And then they also documented in very detailed how to shoot the cinema with Alfel camera. So if anybody wants to try, there is documentation available on our wiki. And so I told that the camera has modular structure. This is the boards, the main system board and sensor board that has to be in every camera. And then there is also interface board that provides additional interfaces like USB, SATA, and has serial port. And with this board we can attach external devices like external hard drive, USB, GPS device, and it's good with for the troubleshooting because it has the serial console. So then there is also multi-sensor multiplexer board that allows to attach up to 3 sensors to the same system board, and also it has the same programmable chip, the FPGA, that will allow to maybe do some FPGA development, which some of our customers do, but they don't want to compromise the system board. They can just do it separately on this multiplexer board. And these are some of the camera configurations that kind of evolved out of the available modules, the boards. So the basic camera, then the stereo camera with 2 sensors that with the help of multiplexer, multi-sensor board, we can do that. And last year we had developed that you can attach the inertial measurement unit to the camera and the GPS. Then the camera with hard drive for recording straight to the hard drive. Then the hammer camera is kind of like a simple, not a very high resolution, but it provides the observation of 360 degrees because it has two fisheye lenses with overlapping. Then again, because we were thinking about how to make it as easy as possible for our clients to make modifications to the camera, we have the basic modifications can be done because camera is controlled through the web interface. So any changes can be done in the controls for the just by web development. And then we use PHP language also because it's like without knowing system languages, you can add functionality to the camera. And of course, it's all going deeper. You can do modifications in camera program in C, C++, and even in the FPGA. And all this documentation is available on the SourceForge, which we also use as version control tools for ourselves. So every new any new update is being uploaded there immediately. And the licenses, and our like schematics, PCB layouts, and documentation that other than code is available on our wiki page. Wiki.alfel.com. As far as licenses, we distribute our software under GNU GPL license and documentation under the free documentation license. And hardware, now, well, a couple years ago, there was a new CERN started their open hardware license. So we just before we were using GNU GPL for everything, but since this hardware license was available, our hardware is distributed under that. This map is kind of incomplete. It's probably more by now. I haven't been updating it for a couple years, but it shows like cameras all around the world, even in Antarctica. In Antarctica, it's also only in summers, of course, but this is our clients, and mostly, as I say, mostly these are universities, startup companies, but there are also some more like production manufacturers that design, maybe using the camera for traffic control or robotics in kind of, not in research, but already in product. This camera that I was describing here has been out in the world for 7 years, and so we have been thinking for quite a while already that it's time to design a new one, more powerful, more contemporary, being able to easily attach newer sensors to the camera and have higher frame rate or anything. But so this is the design for the new NC393 camera that will be powered by Xilinx Zinc, and it combines the processor and the FPGA on a single chip and a set of peripherals. So the reason we kind of this board will be able to support up to 4 sensors at once, and also with the new multiplexer that will be designed for this camera, you can connect up to 16 sensors. And there might be a question like, why do you need this multi-sensor camera? Well, partially while we were thinking to design a new camera and looking for the right combination of processor, FPGA, what can be handled, what can handle fast enough image processing with faster sensor, higher resolution sensor. There were a couple options available like 2 years ago, but there were still like two separate, it would be a separate FPGA for image processing and separate processor. And for being able to make this, to have a good bandwidth between FPGA and processor, it's better to have them on one chip. So once we learn that this Zynq is going to be released, and it, of course it was delayed several times when they said that it will be released in a year ago, then it was delayed for another half a year, a couple times. So we had this waiting period when we couldn't yet design a new camera because this processor FPGA wasn't yet available. But we used that time to design multi-sensor cameras that I will be talking about later. And now, once this will be in production, we already have convinced ourselves in these last 2 years that multi-sensor is probably the future of the cameras. So it's okay, I will talk about this. Why is it so in future slides? So in the two or three of the last years, we have been working on panoramic camera. As I told you before, we helped integrate our electronics into Google Street View camera. And then we were not completely satisfied with the design they had done for the whole rig, the whole camera itself. It was really big, and so had a huge parallax. And of course, with their software engineers, they can deal with it in software. But we were thinking that it's possible to design a smaller and more compact, and at the same time, high resolution camera. So this is ISIS 4Pi, which is a full sphere panoramic camera that has 24 sensors. These 5 megapixel sensors, the main ones that we use in all of our cameras, and the final image, the stitched panorama, is the resolution is 64 megapixel. And this is the camera exploded view of the camera configuration. So it has camera head with all 24 sensors arranged so that they cover the full sphere. And it uses the same system board, interface boards, multi-sensor boards. It has several solid-state drives within the camera pole also for recording. And the image below, the colorful one, shows how the sensors are arranged so that there is no interruption in scanning. Well, this is the CMOS sensor, so it doesn't take a snapshot image. It scans the image line by line. So when the camera is moving and you have multiple sensors attached to each other, arranged, you don't want to have half of the picture being started at the different time. So they arranged in a way that they kind of scan the image from the same point, and so there is no breaking in the picture, in the final picture. So the color shows the time of scanning, and the triangular images are the top sensors, and then the triangular images on the bottom are the bottom sensors. So we kind of, with 24 sensor, we could have, seems to be, could have 120 megapixels, but because we lose half of the pixels in this top and bottom sensors, it's just 64. But still, this is the highest highest amount of highest resolution panoramic camera out in the market right now. And we presented this camera on the SIGGRAPH last year, which is a special interest group for graphics and interactive technique, the show. And it was, again, a fun experience to be presenting there with Pixar and Autodesk right next to us. And of course, it was a lot of work for a small company to be presenting kind of at the same level. And this is a preview image of what the camera sees, the panoramic camera with its 24 eyes. Actually, it takes the images in a low compression JP4 format that we have developed also when we were working on Google Street View camera. And it's a low compression, almost lossless compression JPEG. So this is more a preview for operator, human operator. And it also shows the camera position on the map. So this is before the panoramas were stitched. And the camera is controlled also with web GUI. You can set up different parameters like exposure, white balance, frame rate, compression level. You can all preset that here and then hit the record button to start recording. And here we see the stitched panorama in equirectangular projection. So it has to be viewed on the sphere rather than flat. And if I will get the internet connection at the end of presentation, we can show it how it's on the how it's viewed on the WebGL viewer that we are using. With this WebGL viewer, we have developed an editor, panorama editor. So once you have shot and stitched your panoramas, you can manually adjust the orientation of the panoramas by the cardinal points and adjust the horizon, because especially like in this place, the camera was put on a person on a backpack, not in a car. So when the car is moving, it's relatively straight. But when somebody, well, of course, there could be also inclines. And, but when the person was walking on this rough terrain in Goblin Valley, the camera was bumping a lot and like rotating, and sometimes all you see is the sky in the image. So before we can use the IMU logs for automatically adjust position and orientation of the camera, we can do it manually with this web editor, and it has the controls down at the bottom for that. And also with this editor, we can put the panoramas in the sequence and create kind of a walkthrough. And you don't have to always see all the cameras. They kind of show the path right now. You can turn them off and just have the little footsteps or some other notes where you can know how to get to the next step. We can also put the camera path on the map. And this image is actually was showing, okay, that was when Google had Ladybug 3, another camera, for doing Google Street View in Salt Lake City. Now I think they updated to better images, but that was just a comparison of ISIS Popeye and this other camera. Now, how do we get to having like really sharp, good images on our panoramas? Maybe it's not just So before, actually, before dealing with panoramic cameras, we didn't really concern ourselves very much with the optics, but were mostly designing the camera electronics, and then our clients could have used different lenses depending on the application, and the results could be very different as well. But here with this panoramic camera, we had to think about, like, first of all, the lenses couldn't be too big because we wanted to make it compact. And so we've chosen some really small board lenses, they called. But after testing several different types, just chosen the one that seemed to be kind of best price for performance, but not so much price, but just like the number of parameters were mostly satisfying. Still, there is like a lot of has to be done in post-processing of the images after they are taken to be able to achieve the uniform high-resolution panoramic image. And also, we figured that a lot of times we want to see something really small, like these letters on the building, and especially for that kind of application, that could be important to be able to read the street number, street name, house number, and other information. So we wanted to sharpen certain areas of the image. Again, we are not interested in sharpening the sky because it would be just adding noise, but like something like letters or tree branches, it would be nice to have them sharp and crisp. So to do all that, we have to start with carefully designing the sensor lens module, which is kind of after it's designed, after it's adjusted, it becomes a fixed unit that is not supposed to change its parameters in any way. So first of all, there is this adjustment machine that we also had to design ourselves. This is, I'm kind of talking about all this in detail because it seems like once we wanted to do these panoramic cameras, we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into, how many steps and how many different things that we didn't know kind of come your way and you have to deal with them. So kind of dealing with them one by one, and that maybe can be interesting to know that sometimes when you are you have the company that and you are the engineer, you not only need to know electronics, but you need to know optics, you need to know mechanical design, and this kind of grows like a ball of what different knowledge you have to have or hire. And anyway, this is the lens adjustment machine that adjusts sensor and lens, adjusts its the image plane of the lens to be parallel to the sensor, and the simple thing like that, even centering them both to each other. And this lens adjustment machine is actually controlled by one of our cameras that can be used as a controller board. And this pattern is also used because the camera, the sensor lens module is taking images of the pattern while adjusting, and by seeing the distortions, we can figure out like the program figures out how much it needs to be shifted, tilted. Also, each lens has its own aberrations, and it can be, again, the same lens. For the panoramic camera, we need 26 lenses. So each one of them is different. Even they have the same specifications. In reality, they are, of course, different. They have a little bit different aberrations, a little bit different distortions. And all of that has to be corrected precisely if we want to get this uniform and high-resolution image at the end. So the aberrations are usually bigger towards so the lens is really sharp in the center, and then towards the edges, it gets more blurry and stretched, as can be seen on this point spread function image on the right. So again, this image is done also by having the camera taking photographs of the pattern and comparing it with the ideal pattern. We can compensate for these aberrations, which are unique for each lens. And that's kind of what I was talking about. We want to sharpen certain areas of the image. And this is what we need the aberrations corrected for. And also there are optical distortions in each lens. So there are most common pincushion and barrel distortion that is not usually very visible in a photographic image. Because the same goes about the aberrations, that if we take the photograph, a single snapshot of the any landscape, we usually are interested in the image being sharp and nice in the center. We don't really care so much about, we don't really even notice so much what's happening at the edges. But if you stitch several of those images, and you will definitely notice that in some places it's sharper and in some places it's blurry. That happens because there is no center in the panoramic image, so you just don't want this ununiform appearance. And yes, and the distortions, the most obvious ones are fisheye lens distortions that everybody had noticed, but other lenses that don't seem to have any distortion still have this either pincushion or barrel, or actually in real life it's more complicated shape of a distortion of a lens. So we want to correct for these distortions because for automatic panorama stitching we would need to be able to assign each pixel its ray in space from the center of the lens to the image. This way we don't have to manually try to adjust two images together. We just know exactly where each pixel goes, and if it overlaps on two images, we know which ones to combine together. I mean, not we, but the software would know that. And so this for automatic stitching, panorama stitching, we need to correct the distortion and straighten the image. And yes, this is how it's done. Then we had to design this calibration machine that we call the goniometer. It rotates the camera in two axes and takes about 1,500 images of the pattern. And with these images, it takes into account about 1,000 different parameters, like the distance of the lens of the camera of each sensor lens module from the pattern, its own focal length, the position of the sensor lens module within the camera. And by combining all that, it determines the coordinates of each intersection of black and white, like each node of this pattern. Then it can be, again, it can be compared to the ideal pattern that is generated by the program, because it's a simple repetition pattern. We can create these calibration files that can be applied in the post-processing to compensate for the distortions of the image. So this calibration is what we were actually showing at the SIGGRAPH, because we were presenting this camera as a photogrammetric camera. Photogrammetry is the practice of determining objects' geometric properties just from the images, from photographic images. And what we are talking about is that this camera, after all this calibration has been done, all the aberrations and distortions are corrected, and each pixel is assigned its ray in space, it can be used as a photogrammetric tool. And actually, we are talking about creating not just panoramas, but creating a 3D mesh and then applying photographic images and getting the 3D panoramas with this camera. And again, this is different from like from the camera that is not calibrated, because you have to have this precision to be able to accurately develop the 3D model. So with this goniometer machine, we presented the calibration process at SIGGRAPH, and our booth was designed so it can be like a real station, real calibration station, except for the picture was just for showing off what kind of panoramas it can do. But funny, we were thinking how again we will use it, but we had to actually use it while we had to move to the new office and keep working while our new office was built. We could use that calibration mobile station that was our booth at SIGGRAPH. This is the new office that is designed with the main purpose of calibrating the cameras. So this pattern is rather large. It's about maybe not as big as that back wall, but about 7 by 3 meters. And the camera can be positioned far enough from the pattern that it can be still within the focal length of the lenses. But for high accuracy, it's better to be as far away from the pattern as possible. So with this rotation, with the precise angles that goniometer machine rotates the camera, we can also calibrate the IMU, the inertial measurement unit that is part of the camera. It's installed within the camera, so we can we know the precision, the specification of the IMU, but we also can kind of compare it with the results of the our own measurements at the rotations of the camera. So the IMU can be calibrated for high precision that way. And also we can calibrate for flat field correction, and which is basically color correction. The inertial measurement unit that we are using in the camera, obviously one reason is to provide position and orientation of the camera so that we don't need to manually adjust each panorama, and we can use the IMU information for that. But also, like this image is showing what happens if there is a fast moving object or the camera is moving fast with the CMOS sensor, which is a electronic rolling shutter sensor. So as I said, it's not a snapshot. It takes scans images line by line. Takes about 2,000 lines in the image. And if the camera is moving fast, then the image gets skewed like that. So to be able to compensate for that, we also can use the IMU information, because IMU takes 2,500 samples per second, and we can know about every 50th line, we can know the position and orientation of the camera, and then that can be compensated in the post-processing as well. With all this high precision of camera lenses, camera sensor lens modules, and knowing precisely the position and orientation of the camera, we can use two cameras as a stereo pair for creating this 3D, for obtaining this 3D information. So usually it's like fixed base stereo that can provide this 3D information. But if we are certain in our distance between the cameras, with all this precise measure, precise calibration that we did before, we can use the same camera in two positions or in more, in far away positions with different stereo bass to actually measure distances and get geometric properties of the objects within the scene. To assist in that, we actually have, I didn't say that before, I was just talking that it has 24 eyes in the camera head, but there are two additional sensor lens modules in the camera pole positioned at a fixed distance of 1 meter right now. And with this, we can again add the precision of measuring distances of the objects that happen to be within the field of view of these bottom sensors and the exact ones above in the camera head. So it doesn't give the full panoramic point cloud of the objects around, but at least some of the objects are measured already, and that again just adds the assists in determining like something that you can hold on to when building the panorama from two shots. Again, with the like two or more shots and shots taken at far away distance, we can measure not only objects within the immediate view, but somewhere far away objects like mountains and anything that usually is much harder to do. The other thing that can be done after the 3D mesh is reconstructed is that it can be applied, we can create high dynamic range of this 3D panoramas. So if we take one underexposed and one overexposed image while the camera is still moving, we cannot combine these two images on the same shot. You have to do it from like absolutely still camera if you want to combine them later. But with the 3D, once the 3D mesh is reconstructed, then you can, doesn't matter if the camera moved and shifted its position, you can combine this underexposed and overexposed image to create the high dynamic range panorama. And some other photogrammetric applications of the that we are developing right now. So this Triclops camera is a prototype for the cinematographic camera that we are developing right now. The idea of multi-sensor in this case is, and the again, these are calibrated optoelectronic modules. These are the same sensor lens modules that are calibrated for aberrations and distortions. And so we can trust the pixels that we are getting with this camera. And so having the three of them arranged in a triangular fixed position, we can measure distances within that shot. And one thing we can do with this is we can define our own focal plane and create the depth of field that is so much dear to the cinematographers when something is in focus, and that's an artistic effect, that other stuff is blurred. So here we are using the 3D information for achieving this effect. This is a simple kind of HTML demo that shows it, and I can show it again after the presentation how it works if I get the internet connection. But basically, we can just set our own distance measured by the with these three lenses. We know the distances to the objects, and whatever distance you are setting the focal point at, this becomes your sharp object. Other objects are kind of blurred, but here it's not, it's just a demo, so it doesn't show it completely, so you can see, you see them separating. So instead of one clear image, you see three kind of blurring and overlapping images. And this, as I said, this is the prototype image, prototype camera, the Triclops. But with this multi-sensor camera, we can achieve a better 3D model, high accurate 3D model, and we can do the high dynamic range simultaneously, because some sensors will be taking images underexposed and some are overexposed. And also we can combine the resolution of three sensors and this way get the overall resolution of the camera. Right now, up to 6K, which is pretty high for the cinematographic standards. So what it does, this has like seven groups of three sensors each, and the seven allows you to make better, higher accuracy 3D model, while also you can assign three and four of those to be underexposed and overexposed for high dynamic range. And the groups of three are combining the resolution of, say, 8-megapixel sensor that we are planning to use to 24. So that's the idea. This is what we are working on right now, and this is why we are excited that our new camera will be able to provide video in terms of frame rate, and also will be able to support many sensors at once. So I should say that with all this, some of these projects are finished, some of them are in progress, some of them are just envisioned and kind of under development. We have tons of internship opportunities, and a lot of different things can be worked on in our lab. So if anybody will be interested, you guys are welcome to stop by, get a better look at everything, and maybe get an idea to work on something. And yeah, we are, of course, just look up on the web. There is more information, more detailed information about what we are doing and how to find us. And I think some of this, concepts are kind of, I can only skip on top. I cannot really get into the detail. It's quite complicated. So Oleg and Andrei can answer more of the questions if you have some, if something wasn't clear, maybe I didn't say something right, then yeah, they can correct me, or if you didn't understand something. And where is your, can you help me with the internet? Yeah, I think we have plenty of time, right? Yeah.
I think it's connected now.
Maybe it is connected, yeah. Let's see, let's close that.
If you open the browser, it should ask you for some. Agreeing to some.
I don't need that, the browser. I don't,
you just need to open some.
Yeah, I need to. I wanted to open the Google Chrome. What is it? Okay. Yeah, I'll just find it. it doesn't show that screen here. Да нет, я не хочу ее грузить пока, не хочу передвигать пока она здесь.
Ну, ну,
она, видишь, не грузит ничего. А это что делает?
Скрываю, я не вижу.
Я не пойму, как ее остановить даже.
Закрыть, наверное.
Ой.
Это надо было сказать.
А, это что такое? Here it wants me to connect, okay. Да и туда передвинем. Я никак не могу его туда. See, it shows this. So it loaded something. It looks like it's not connected. But it takes a while. Is it slow?
Is it supposed to be fast? Yeah, it is.
Закрыть его?
Просто не знаю. Попробуй другую, я не знаю.
А другая тоже не делается. And this guest wireless, that's everything is okay here, right? Надо тогда остановить, что ли? Она тоже не хочет. Here is the view of the calibration place. And here, because it's really inside the space, inside the interior, you can see the parallax. Even on this camera that has very little, still it's not it's too close to the camera view. Then we can walk to the next position.
Because there is no actual 3D reconstruction right here, and the only way how do you can avoid parallax near objects if you do 3D reconstruction and then map all the images to this to the single center of the camera. Yeah, this is not done yet. So.
Takes forever to get to the next camera, so it's not really.
Yeah, it was so fast to load one and then. We can try.
Ah. What do you do when that happens?
It
got right inside itself. So these are the camera eyes. The but it's still loading something, I don't know. Oh, maybe because I zoomed out, scrolled out?
Some bug.
Jumped right inside its own head.
But you can clone them both.
The cameras? Ah. He's done. Okay. Do they have the controls here? No, showing four. Ah, yeah. So we can turn the show cameras off. So then there will be just like footsteps here to jump on them. Yeah, it went to it. Well, we cannot really see the resolution here, right? On the get closer. So here is where the camera itself, and it's arranged so that the lenses that it doesn't see itself, so there is no really black spot, right? It's just
but they overlap a little, yes.
Okay. Very, very close. I just want to close this one.
With
that case, I don't want it.
On the depth, on the right of each depth.
Ah, okay. Okay. Here is our beautiful Salt Lake City, Main Street. I was shocked to see, is it wavy? Because it's the screen that's wavy. It's actually really straight. And this is what the difference between this camera and the last Google camera is, that they arrange the sensors like to cover the sphere in the most economical way. So it's not, ours are like kind of like slices of orange. They go like that, and they have them like all over the place. So when the camera is moving, and especially we notice that in Los Angeles, in the street view, you can look up and see that the palm trees are just, the tops of the palms are just off in the air. And they don't correct it, but with the buildings, with tall buildings, they correct it in software, but the buildings are kind of wavy. So that must be not the ideal correction. So I wonder if I will be able to go to the next. Yeah, here it works. So I can, I'm kind of jumping over several camera views. Ah, here we're right under the bridge. Nothing to see there. It's better to see that on the screen, actually, with like, I think the colors are kind of off with that light and.
Yeah. With this, could you do something in real time where it's like.
This is what our clients ask.
Oh, all right.
They all want highest resolution and real time and cheap. This is like what I was talking about, post-processing.
Mm-hmm.
So we take all record all the images, and with the SSDs inside, we can record several hours. I don't remember exactly, it depends on the compression level and frames per second. But then we have to come to the office, download the images, and start running it through the for, and it takes, like, to, if to do all of our corrections, the aggression correction is the longest. It takes about 20 minutes. So each panorama takes, like, about 25 minutes to make.
Oh, really? Oh.
But if we can, it's like to make these really good ones, you can still stitch them using other tools, and they will be not as perfect, but that could be done, like, a lot quicker, but still it's like a few minutes, not on the fly. And I think part of the bottleneck is that it's high resolution, and then again, depending on what computer is doing the processing, what, how many, we recommend using server farm for the faster processing. Okay, I think, did it change?
Sometimes I might get trying to push the limit of resolution, of performance, and not, a small company, you can't cover all all the aspects. So this is probably to some software developers to optimize it for the end user. Because our software is mostly like to demonstrate what Kendra can do.
Okay, so now it doesn't scroll anymore because it's, I think it's set right now to scroll only to be 100%. But then in camera controls you can,
I think you can do
maybe
with shift.
Yeah, oh, with shift? Oh,
with shift,
like
I think you can go to higher resolution.
Don't see where it is.
No, it's not.
It's not
scroll with shift.
Ah, okay. Ah, then you can scroll more. So that's beyond 100%. I see the train coming. And then the other one, maybe it will load now. This one was kind of fun to play with, but I don't think I explained it very well, like about the disparity between the images and the...
Yeah, it's just a simple web application that takes three images and then you can move them
with the Tricops camera.
Center, like change. It's like on the old, there are some like old photo cameras with rangefinder, like not focusing with the lens, but a separate two, like a mirror, like, and then you could, you see the two overlapping, two images, and then you make them match. It doesn't like this.
No, Alex has that. Wait, it should show up.
But it did open the panoramas.
Yeah, it opened.
Okay.
Okay, here are the controls.
Nothing
so
much difference. Shift.
Что с шифтом?
Какой шифт на колесико?
Зачем? Это зум? So I'll try to focus on myself, I guess.
Yeah, so it's supposed to be used for like 3D reconstruction, but here it's just simple raw, okay, with corrected distortions, but basically there's just three separate images that are precisely corrected, but no software reconstruction is done. It's just with JavaScript you move them closer or farther.
Right, and then it like how far I chose that the distance to this person is 6.5 meters, and the disparity at this is 23
pixels,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that 23 pixels is between the cameras, between the images. Mm-hmm.
If we put display to zero, you'll see the mountains, sharp mountains in the wastage.
No, I'm trying to focus on the on this apples. Yeah, about here, 3.4 meters. All right, I think this is all. This is all we have.
So is this like just a whole bunch of pictures overlaid on each other, kind
three.
Of?
Three pictures. Yeah, overlaid. Just three right. pictures from the Triclops camera with three sensors.
Right.
And yeah, they take, each one takes image from a slightly different position, like our eyes, right?
Yeah, but the,
like focusing on a different spot,
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of.
This is this camera, you see
yeah.
these three lenses.
No, it's just like I'm looking from here, or I'm looking from here.
Oh, all right.
So I have a lot, and that, like with three is better than two, because sometimes you still, even with two eyes, you don't see something behind,
yeah, if it's
hidden behind
horizontal
object.
Some horizontal
and then with the third,
the
you get another one, another point of view.
And the other, this was like, you showed the slide with 21, because if you have these multiple cameras with at different points, that you can measure, find the distance to the
all
object.
Right.
Then you can perfectly stitch multiple low resolution cameras if they are looking in different directions.
Oh, all right.
Because if it was just three looking, like in this panoramic camera, for the closed objects you will see some, they will not match because of parallax.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have 3D information from the other cameras, then you can perfectly stitch. Because for each pixel you know the distance, and then you can get, you can put a mosaic of low resolution sensors, which are now really kind of perfected because of the cell phone applications. So it really pushed the technology, this application, to make high performance but small sensors. And if you put multiple of them, and you have 3D information to kind of stitch perfectly, then you can combine resolution, and it will, you are, it's scalable.
Limitless
you can get
resolution.
Any
you, can get
you put more sensors, you get higher resolution. So it's, you're not limited to like optics or single sensor, just.
Could be scalable
yeah.
camera.
Yeah. But for this, you need 3D data from other cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's just a small demo and step in there.